This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Great Scott!
I got a bad feeling about this.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Yes, sir!
This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Han Solo, I've been waiting for this day for a long time.
Can't wait.
This is the Bart and Han Show on 98.7 ESPN.
It's 12 o'clock in the greatest city in the world. Alan Han, no Bart Scott, he's in the morning. Still Bart and Han, though, and we will be back together next week in the new time, 11 to 1 right now, with you from 12 to 3. 800-919-3776 is the number, and you can also join us on social media, at Bart and Han on Twitter, Instagram. And then starting again next week, we'll go back to doing all the IG Live stuff that we do before shows.
Han.
But as we said, the schedule completely changes all next week. We're looking forward to that. But you have Bart Scott, Rick DiPietro, and Dave Rothenberg in the mornings this week doing that. So what you've got now for the next 3 hours is what we used to call Han Solo. And that means the buffet is, wait for it, open. Grab your plates, get in line, 800-919-3776. What we do is we like, wow, held on to it, that one. Nice, Anthony. Just for effect. What we do is we talk about the different headlines and the stories in the world of sports, and you call in and you might have a take that you want to have on different topics in the world of sports as well. That's why we call it a buffet. We go all over the map. We'll have David Quinn of the Rangers, if you're a Rangers fan. We'll have your coach on at the bottom of the hour to discuss where that team goes from here, as the Rangers are not part of what is now the Stanley Cup playoffs in the bubbles. They did not get out of the qualifying round, but still, from losing, they win as they get the number one overall pick. And just good to talk to Quinny just to kind of wrap up the season, a little exit interview with the coach. So we'll have that. But of course, we will get into also, you Islanders fans, what a game yesterday. I mean, what a compelling game, a frustrating game, but that's playoff hockey. And that was an exciting game, especially if you're an Islanders fan, because you'll love the way the team just stayed with it, even though early on you had some penalty, you had a lot of penalties. What did we say? Stay out of the box. Stay out of the penalty box. And they couldn't do it. First period, some controversy already coming out of that game, some things, some allegations by the Capitals coach, Tom Reardon. So plenty of that to get into. And if you're an Islanders fan, here's your chance. I always hear from you guys. You always tell me, like, you guys never talk Islanders. Whenever you talk hockey, it's only the Rangers. Well, here's your chance. You want to talk? Call 800-919-3776. But what we've got also to get into, Jay Williams. Jay Will, going to join us 2 o'clock hour. We'll get into a lot of the basketball stuff with him, some of the college stuff as well. He will be part of the new morning show, which starts on Monday as well. So we'll get Jay Will there, David Quinn coming up out of the hour, and of course, your calls. We begin with baseball, and so we'll do the Yankees report, brought to you by Mazda. And this is on what we saw yesterday from the Yankees, which there's a lot of takeaways from the win, all right, and taken to from the Braves. Masahiro Tanaka, right, gave up the big home run. But other than that, you just want to see him just continue to find himself. You want to get to the playoffs with him feeling great, and you feel pretty good about him and obviously in Cole. And I guess Montgomery, you know, can Paxton have a couple more good starts? And now all of a sudden, the concerns that I asked and I said about the other, it was just the other day coming out of what I think it was that they lost five of their previous seven before these two games with the Braves. Now you got a 4-game set, by the way, over the weekend with the Red Sox, who are a mess. But what I asked was, what's your biggest concern about the Yankees? And almost everyone said starting pitching. You know, everybody else, you bring up Gary Sanchez, at least he went yard last night, good to see. You know, very few people said it was Sanchez and Torres, but the most response I got from that question was about the starting pitching. And that, I think it's going to take time to work out the starting pitching. The offense can always overcome it, and that's always been the thing with the Yankees. Now, there's two ways we can go here with the Yankees. You want to go negative or you want to positive? Which way do you want to go, negative or positive? I think the first thing you do is you go, let's go negative. Let's get it out of the way. Let's get the obvious out of the way. And the obvious negative that you have to get out of the way is that Aaron Judge, who was removed from the game yesterday, 2 days ago, and everybody's, you know, caught everybody's attention. It's not, he's fine, he's fine, he'll be all right. Well, he was not in the lineup last night. Now, Clint Frazier was, and a lot of fans, of course, absolutely love Clint Frazier and want to see him play. He gets in the game, and he has himself a day. Good for him. He gets a home run in his first at-bat, double, single. Couldn't get the cycle, struck out in his other at-bat, but still, at least you got production out of that, and a kid who's really trying to prove himself that he can play at this level believes he can. But there is always concern when Aaron Judge is held out of a game for physical reasons. Aaron Boone, after the game, told us basically that Judge has, you know, general stiffness in his lower body, which, you know, a lot of us can relate to that. And so they decided just precautionary, sit him out, just make sure he's right because you got the off day, and then you go into a division series against the Red Sox.
You know what? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's how we all feel. Because he tried to let us know, you know, he wanted to play, but we're just going to take that extra precaution. Why not? It's a short season. You want to make sure that whatever he's dealing with, that he just gets rid of it, gets it out of his system. So how much do we want to believe that? I just think because of the fragility between him and Stanton, you get so worried about those guys. Especially the way Judge has been hitting, the way he's just been a monster this year. I mean, his numbers have been fantastic, so you don't want to see anything that might suggest that he might miss some time. But there's no reason so far, at least right now, there's no reason to believe that Judge will not be okay enough to play this weekend. That's all we know, but that's the concern. I mentioned Frazier. That's a nice story. I don't want to overreact, though. I mean, a lot of you guys, seriously, a lot of you guys that I've heard from just want to see him play. He should be on this team. He should be here. And I keep saying, well, where's he going to play? There's no doubt he can play, but where's he going to play? Talkman's been really good. I think a lot of fans want to see Brett Gardner just get out of the way. I mean, I just still think Gardner is fairly productive, although, again, getting older and you're reaching that point now where the reliable veterans are great to have around. And now that brings me to the positive stuff. And this is the part I think, this is what really excites me, because you have, I don't know what it is about the Yankees, but there's certain moves they make and they seem so under the radar. Then they make them, and then after the fact, you look back, like again, Talkman, Urshela, find a guy like Mike Ford, Luke Voit, Aaron Hicks. Like, these are all these types of moves where you're like, you just sort of, when they make them, everybody just sort of glazes over unless you're a diehard. And then after you see the results, it really catches your interest. Now, DJ LeMahieu was a big name, but it didn't draw the same type of excitement when they signed him last year. It was sort of but you know what? He took advantage of, you know, the thin air and the stadium out there. And, you know, is he going to be the same player at Yankee Stadium? DJ LeMahieu has been one of the best hitters in baseball, or at least I should say continues to be one of the best hitters in baseball over the last couple of seasons. I mean, last year you saw what he did. He was an MVP caliber player. This year, he's just been insane. He had a terrific game yesterday again. 4-for-5. His batting average now is up to .431. And of course, that brings the first question, because he's not the only one hitting .400, by the way. I mean, you see what Charlie Blackman's doing. Charlie Blackman's only said, what is he, hitting .500 almost? So you have Charlie Blackman hitting, what is it, .472 now after yesterday. And you also have Solano's hitting, .458. So you've got three guys now hitting over .400 in Major League Baseball. And I know, batting average doesn't matter anymore. It does when you're going over, you know, you're hitting over .400, because we haven't seen that in a very, very long time. And of course, Buster only talked to us about it when we were saying how this is going to be a 60-game season. And because of it, there'll be some records that you won't be able to touch. Like, obviously, you won't see a home run record this year. But you could see some short-term records, such as somebody having a .400 season. And now you have that ability right here. So how do we view this? And again, there's still a lot of season left. I completely understand it. I mean, this is through 18 games for DJ. So there's still a ton of games left. But in reality, there's a good chance. Like, there's a chance. He's feeling really good. What I love also is that he's, you know, some guys are superstitious, especially in baseball. They don't want to talk about it. I love the fact that he's such a pro's pro. Like when this mistake's made out there, when you watch LeMahieu, I'll tell you what you don't want to do is make a mistake around him. There was a ground ball yesterday, not two days ago, that Glaber, he had a play on it, but Glaber came over, and then they sort of got crossed up, and then DJ ended up getting the error for it, couldn't make the play. Because you could just tell, like, it was that one hesitation because you didn't want the collision, and then it turns into an error. And I'll tell you what, if looks could kill, I mean, he doesn't say anything, he doesn't look at the guy, but you could just see it in his face that he's disgusted. And I remember seeing it last year, too, on a play. I think he was trying to make a play on a foul ball that was, no, on a pop-up that was kind of sort of in the right field area, but closer to first. And he was in between, and I think it was Clint Frazier, actually, tried to make a play on it, and it didn't work. And boy, the look he gave him. Like, that's a guy that's all about the game. He's not all about all the other crap. Like, he's not really into showing, you know, he just, I'm playing baseball. That's what I am. So it's easy for a guy like him to get locked in, and he is locked in. So you would think somebody like him, if you ask him about hitting 400, you'd think DJ LeMahieu is like, you know, I don't talk about him. You know, like, whatever, if it happens, it happens. Like, doesn't want to focus on it, wants to keep it out of the conversation. But I love the fact that yesterday, when he was asked directly about it, he was pretty open about talking about the possibility of someone, not just himself, but someone hitting 400 in a 60-game season. Here's what he said.
I think it's possible. I'm definitely not focused on that. Baseball is way too hard to try to do that. But I think it's possible. I think it's possible for someone like that, too. I think it's going to be, in 2 months of baseball, there's going to be some eye-popping stats, I think, and a lot of surprises. So I guess that is the fun part of the 60 games for sure.
It's the fun part to watch it, no question. Again, he's hitting 431. Is it 17 games? Now I'm looking at MLB, and they're saying 17. I thought he was playing 18 games. All right, but still, 431, and you still got two players in Major League Baseball. So he's leading American League. So you could see him. By the way, next in the American League is Bo Bichette, which sounds like Boba Fett, doesn't it? Because I said it really fast. But and that kid's he's playing real well for Toronto. 352, by the way. So he's got the lead by far. If he wins this, he'd be the first, like, and I had to look this up, and I know they were talking about it yesterday on the broadcast. So, Ed Delahanty, right? So he's I love this. This story is mind blowing. I don't know if you ever heard it. So the only player to ever win the batting title in both leagues, the American League and the National League. Like, I don't know why I thought like this can't, like, this probably was something that happened maybe in the '60s or whatever. You know, it had to have happened before. You really got to go back to 1902. So Delahanty, they called him Big Ed. He won the National League batting title in 1899 and then the American League in 1902. And then he died in 03 at the age of 35. And a lot of baseball historians know this story, but it's an incredible story. He was on a train. He left his team. Was it Saginaw or whatever it was? He was playing for a team. He wasn't happy. He was going to go home. So he takes the train, and as the legend goes, he got drunk on the train, and they threw him off the train. So I'm not literally threw him off, but, you know, they kicked him off the train. So he gets off the train, and so he starts walking on the tracks. He goes over a bridge that I guess there's a bridge that goes by through Niagara Falls, and he fell. And, there's whether he jumped, whether he was pushed, or whether he just slipped and fell, that's the story. And he died. Like, it's an incredible story when you read about it, and they still don't have, they don't know what really happened that night or that day. But all they know is that at the age of 35, one of the greatest hitters of the game was gone. So it's just, by the way, the guy played for teams like the Philadelphia Quakers and the Cleveland Infants. Just stuff like that just makes me laugh.
Goes, that's just funny.
Yeah, well, it just shows you how long ago it was, right? So DJ LeMahieu has a chance to match that, and it's something to watch. It's something that's kind of interesting. So for LeMahieu, this is great to watch. But you wonder, if he does it, let's just say he does win the batting title. Let's say he even hits over 400. The batting title is one thing. I think, you know, the batting title is a batting title. It doesn't matter. You were the best hitter that year, even if it was 60 games or 160 games. It doesn't matter. You're the best hitter. You get the title. But if he hits over 400, how do we look at it? How does baseball history look at it? And then, of course, you know, when it comes to Hall of Fame, and whenever he is up to be in the Hall of Fame, how do they look at it? You know, how is it judged in the eyes of the voters? DJ LeMahieu become a Hall of Famer because two batting titles in two different leagues and he hit over 400, even though it was a 60-game season? Winning a championship certainly would help for him. But you remember, the knock on him was, well, he's, you know, he's playing in the, you know, the thin air, and it's a little bit easier for him, and, you know, maybe he's not the same hitter. But he's been a, I mean, he's been a pro's pro. He's been an insane hitter and clutch. And what a table setter he's become. Like, this is, what a great fit, and what a perfect Yankee. I mean, he's exactly it. He just fits exactly what you, the image of a Yankee is, that's basically him. Got it, just head down, just plays baseball. Like, that's old school. If you're an old school Yankees fan, that's exactly what you love. Aaron Boone certainly loves it. Aaron Boone certainly loves having a guy like him out there to set the table. And he talked about how he's asked if he marvels at what he sees from LeMahieu, especially through his consistency.
Yeah, he's pretty good. you know, obviously starting the year, kind of hurrying up to get caught up a little bit with the COVID stuff to start. And, you know, he just picked up from where he left off last year, just laying the barrel on the ball, just completely setting the tone for us at the top of the order.
And remember, he also started off the season, or whatever he started off, he was one of the Yankee players that dealt with COVID. But the Yankees have a decision to make. He's 32, but he's one of the best hitters in the game. And he's become so important to them, solid in the field, but also important in their lineup. And so how much do you give him? Are you going to have to pay him? I mean, what's it worth? It's got to be worth a lot. And that's something I think you keep an eye on. I mean, think about, I know $12 million is a lot of money to a lot of us, but that's a steal. It's a steal for what he's doing. So, of course, that's something you won't have to deal with till the end of the season, but the more he continues with this, you know, the better we go here. 800-919-3776 is the number, and that is the Yankee Report, brought to you by Mazda. Discover the family of award-winning Mazda CUVs, including the first-ever Mazda CX-30, the versatile Mazda CX-5, and the three-row CX-9, all engineered to deliver confidence on the road ahead. Visit MazdaUSA.com or see your local Mazda dealer for more details. So, again, the Frazier thing is nice. It was a cool story to see. How about the nose piercing? You know, you go to the alternate site, you come back with a nose piercing. We don't judge anybody. Come back and hit a home run. That's all people care about. That's good to see him do that. How do the Yankees view him? Could he be, you know, Booney said he could be an impact player. He said it before the game, before he even did what he did. So, look, the kid's been wanting his opportunity. And how great is it to see that when he gets his opportunity for the first time this year, he tees off? I mean, that's the cool thing to see. All right, so you got something here. It's really tough for the Yankees because they don't really have a place for him right now, although when Judge is injured, they do. With Stanton, they do. But long-term, what's the plan? And is he going to be somebody that by August 31st becomes somebody you dangle out there and maybe can get something else that you need on this team? What does this team need? Aside from maybe a catcher that can hit more consistently, what do they need? There's really not a lot of holes left on this team. You're going to tell me starting pitching. I'm telling you. Paxton will get himself right. They're going to worry about that in the offseason. I think Tanaka will get himself right. Tanaka's he hasn't had a normal type season for him. He always gets up early home runs anyway. It always happens. And Cole is Cole. If you get three guys that can give you something, and Montgomery's been pretty good. So if you get three guys that can do something, I think you're fine. When it comes to playoff series, you know that. It's usually I just need three guys I can trust. And then you've got that bullpen. So I don't know. Like, what is the biggest need for the Yankees? And what do you think they have to address by the deadline, which is coming up in a couple of weeks? Where they, you know, and this is going to be a weird deadline for a lot of teams too. Who's going to be selling big time because you're worried about next year's budget? And who's not going to be selling? Who's not? Who maybe not be as aggressive to go after players because they're concerned about it as well? I don't know. Where is the real need for this team? I'll tell you what the need is. The need is to stay freaking healthy. That's what I think. Where is the true need for the Yankees? Their need is to stay healthy. You can't trade for health. You can't. You got to get through this season. You got to stay at number one. And then once you get to the postseason, then everybody's like, you want to make sure you have all hands on deck. But like a guy like Clint Frazier almost becomes an extra. Like, do you only need him if you're hurt. Other than that, he goes back to the alternate site. Like, what else do you do with him? I can't say, like, when you talk, well, he's got to turn into a trade piece. A trade piece for what? A trade piece for what? And then down the road, you got to think to yourself, I don't trust Stanton. You know, Brett Gardner's not getting any younger. So I do kind of need to have somebody like that in my organization going forward. I don't want to I don't know if I want to trade him. I guess that's the place I'm at right now. He's growing up. He's maturing. That's important. I love the way he talked post-game. I know at times in the past couple of years, he's had a little bit of those issues with he talks about himself. He is a kind of a self guy. But I also know the guy's got talent. And I don't like getting rid of young players with talent, especially when I've got older, brittle players who I don't know if I could trust long term. So the two issues to me, the two things that jumped out at me from last night was DJ LeMahieu needs to get signed. DJ LeMahieu needs to stay at 32. I don't care how old, 32 years old, he's still in his prime, and he's still one of the best hitters in the game. No matter where he's playing, the guy can hit, and he's got so much value to your team. So much. And then the other one is Clint Frazier. The kid comes up. I mean, again, just think about the pressure of that. Put yourself in that situation. You're dying to play. You're dying for your chance. You're frustrated. You haven't played in a real game. You're just doing these stupid sim games down in Scranton. And you get called up. You get your opportunity. You face big league pitching. And you have a day like he had. You're ready to go. That's a great sign. It's a sign of maturity. It's a sign of talent. And I'm not necessarily ready to just get rid of talent like that quickly. Barton Hunt, 98.7 ESPN. I knew Anthony was going here. Because he did play yes yesterday as we were talking Islanders and DiPietro came on. And so he did play that song and the goal song and everything like that. That's great. So because we are going to talk Rangers here with Rangers coach David Quinn in a moment, he's going to play their goal song, which is fine. We will not hear that goal song, of course, until the season starts back up again. They were in the qualifying round and did not advance to the playoff round. But it's amazing that even though they did lose, they still come out winners, and this rebuild that they've been going through, pretty quick turnaround, now we'll have a number one overall pick. And Coach Quinn joins us right now. Quinny, thanks for giving us a few minutes. I'll tell you what, you've had a few days now to decompress from the qualifying round and get out of the bubble. And so when you now reflect and see what your team, and it's still a very young team, went through and how they performed, what do you come away from now with what has been obviously a very weird season for you?
Yeah, it's been strange. The one thing, I'm a lot less pissed than I was when we left Toronto. I'll tell you that after getting the number one pick. It did take a lot of the sting away from what happened up in Toronto. But, you know, it's a unique time for everybody, in particular in sports, because, you know, when the season ended on March 11th, we felt really good about the direction we were going. We felt we were playing really good hockey for about 3 months. Felt we were in a good position to make the playoffs. Then you get the break, and we come back, and, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, the great unknown for everybody was how to handle, you know, going into the bubble and how to train and whatnot. And, you know, I was really, and we all were shocked about how we played, how poorly we played up in the bubble. And there's an awful lot of things that kind of happened that maybe we weren't prepared for. But at the end of the day, nobody cares. I mean, you got to go up there and you got to get it done. And it was just disappointing. But you don't want 3 weeks especially under those circumstances, to taint the whole season. You need to keep it in perspective, and you need to take into account where you're at when you're evaluating your team and where you're at as an organization. You take it all into account.
You know, nobody likes to hear this when they're going through it, but I always think about some of the teams that first time. And the Golden State Warriors, you know, had to get their ass kicked. You know, like everybody had to have that moment when you're young and you go, oh, that's what it's about. And I remember you saying you didn't like after the scrimmage with the Islanders, you didn't like the compete level. I remember you talking about that. And then you said, we didn't come here to get incrementally better. Right. That was your other line. So with that in mind, again, as you said, now you did get the number one pick, so you feel a bit better. But can this be that painful learning experience that then carries over to when you do get back on the ice again? Guys like, you know, whether it's Kapo, whether it's even Shesterkin, a lot of your young players, Fox, they can now say, like, I remember what that was like playing a veteran Hurricanes team that had gone to a conference final that has a system that is really hard to play against. Now we kind of understand that in game one, we can't, this is not a feel out game. This is a go get it game.
Yeah, I think both of you guys understand that. I mean, when you play at a high level, I mean, you know, your coaches and the organization can talk about playoff situations and, you know, the things it takes to be successful in those scenarios. And, you know, sometimes the only teacher is failure. And, you know, and all of a sudden the series ends. And I think a lot of our guys are like, oh, okay, that's what they were talking about. Even though they might have believed us when you're talking about what they're about to entail, you know, maybe to their core they didn't. And they thought they were going to be able to do certain things in the playoffs that they were able to do in the regular season. That's just not the case. And you watch these NHL playoff games, and it's different hockey. And, you know, we really think we've got the makeup to be able to be successful in these playoffs. But sometimes you got to fall flat on your face and get your asses kicked. And that's what happened to us. And talking to all our players and where we're at, we feel like our group, because all the things we didn't show up in Toronto, we had shown during the year. We were in great shape. We were one of the best third period teams in the league. We were mentally tough. We were resilient. And we were none of that up in Toronto. And so, you know, it is, you got to be those things in a little bit different manner when you get in the playoffs. But I think we've got enough of it where guys can realize, okay, there's a different way to approach those areas and those characteristics when you get into the playoffs.
We're talking with David Quinn, coach of the Rangers. They did win the lottery, so they do have the number one pick. Who they pick, I mean, everybody's debating who that's going to be, and I know that's not your decision, obviously. No. And I know Jeff and I know JD have already talked about that on the airwaves, but you did coach in the bubble, and this is, you said it, it's a different experience. And I'm curious, just first and foremost, just from your experience, based on that environment of not just the training camp, but when you all went as a group up to Toronto and all those protocols and everything that went with it, now that you're out of that and you're watching the games now from here, is it surreal? And do you feel like, and as we know, there's zero positives still as they keep testing. Do you feel like, you know what, this was the best way to do it and this is really working? Because it does seem like it's working.
I'll tell you, the league has done an incredible, I don't think the league gets enough credit for what they've done to allow this to happen and allow it to happen successfully. I mean, it is as thorough a job as I think you could possibly do under these circumstances. Every player and every person up there feels safe. They feel comfortable. So hockey becomes the main objective when you're up there, which is really what the league wants, because now you're going to have a better product when everybody's just dialed in about the hockey end of it. And the league has done, I mean, if you want a blueprint on how to handle a crazy situation, I think the NHL has done a phenomenal job. And I'm not just kissing anybody's ass. I'm telling you, and the numbers speak. You know, support that. You know,
I laughed yesterday's game that they had to move to 11 a.m. And anybody that's a hockey dad knows this, and you might even remember. It's like, you know, they're up in Marlboro playing on dirty ice.
Yeah, exactly.
Pucked, yeah, exactly. Nobody in the building. Like, is there something that you'll always remember? Was there a surreal moment for you just being there and feeling like this is so not. And maybe that also is something your team went through, is that it didn't feel like, you know, a real NHL game because it's an empty building and the only cheers you hear are from your own bench.
You know, ours, from the drop of the puck, ours felt like a playoff game because the very first shift, you know, Jesper Fast gets creamed in the neutral zone. You know, they go up 1-0. Strome gets in a fight 2 shifts later. I mean, you know, our series got off to a entertaining and high-intensity start. So we never felt like we weren't in a playoff series. But I will say, coming onto the bench for the exhibition game with the Islanders, there was an eerie feeling when nobody's in the stands and you can hear absolutely everything. I mean, from a coach to player conversation to a referee to player conversation. You could hear everything. So, but once the hockey started, it was it really felt in a lot of ways just like a normal game, because you're just so enthralled in what your responsibilities are as a coach, and the players are obviously focused on what they have to do. So, you know, maybe the highs aren't as high and the lows aren't as low because of the fact that there's no crowd. But, you know, once you got into it, it didn't feel much different once you got going.
Does it create maybe a little more of a communal feeling with the team? Like because it's sort of like we're all we've got. I don't know if that, like, because, I mean, I thought your game 3 was your best game. That fair to say?
100%.
So it did take you time to get to that point, but I imagine without a crowd, you know, home ice advantage is a big deal because you do have the momentum of the crowd behind you. You have none of that. So did you feel the bench was even more invested in the game than usual? Was there what was it different? Again, from TV, we have the fake crowd noise and we have all the other stuff going on. I don't even know what it sounds like in the arena, other than what I remember from yesterday's game with the Islanders. When I'm watching that game, you hear the players when they score the goal from the ice cheer. They yell, yeah, which is, you don't hear that normally. But from the ice perspective, was the bench louder because there wasn't a crowd? Did it change at all that way?
Well, 2 things jump out at me when you bring that up, and you bring up game 3. Okay, so we go up 1-0 and early in the second after playing a great first period. I mean, you know, the first period ends, and as a staff, we're like, okay, there are the Rangers. All right, here we are. We're back. And we really felt, you know, if we were able to gain some momentum and within the game, win a hockey game, it's a whole different series, because we thought we were going to get fast back for game 4. So we go up 1-0, and, you know, put that game in Madison Square Garden. We go up 1-0, and as excited as we were, our level of excitement would have been even higher, you know, behind a, you know, sold out Madison Square Garden. That's what I'm talking about. The highs weren't able to be as high as you possibly could because of the fact that there was no crowd. And then top that with, they score 3 minutes later and their level of excitement is what it is. And our lows, you know, ended up being lower than probably they normally would because we weren't able to ride that high. And then the end of that second period, we have an incredible flurry where, you know, we think Hedl scores, we've got a breakaway. I mean, and their bench goes through the roof when Reimer makes an incredible save, and our guys were really demoralized. And, you know, 1-1 going in between the second and third period, it actually felt like we were behind just because of the way the series had transpired and the way that second period had ended. And, you know, for a team that was very, very good in the third period, physically and mentally, we didn't have it.
That's an interesting perspective. So with that in mind, as the playoffs now move on, what do you see, like, because they talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs as it has the most parity of any sport, and I think it's fair to say that. You get hot goaltending, you have a chance. Look at Montreal. Like, you have a chance if you just have a hot goalie or you have the right kind of system. But in this environment, what do you see, and what do you envision can happen in these playoffs, and maybe a team that no one's talking about that you say, you know what, I keep an eye on that team because in this environment they have a better chance than if it was a normal situation with crowds and everything else?
Well, I think every team, you know, with the home ice advantage, I think I think in this setting, it really isn't even a more even playing field, because you're not going to be able to, you know, you win a road game and you're the underdog. Now you're going home. I mean, your crowd's usually ramped up. That, you know, like I said, your highs, you know, you're able to reach it to a level high, but now it's a little bit more of an even playing field. I think every team going into this tournament under these circumstances felt like they had an opportunity and a chance to win, regardless of what had transpired during the regular season. So, you know, I think every team had hope, and I think that's one of the things we never got within our series. We never felt hopeful because there really wasn't any point in time we felt that we were controlling a game other than game 3 in the after the first period, you know. So I think, you know, because of these teams that maybe were on the outside looking in, they get a second opportunity and they want to take advantage of it. And you bring up Montreal. Not only did Montreal have great goaltending, as that Pittsburgh series went on, I thought they were playing better, and they, you know, it wasn't just their goalie by the time that series ended. And you watch that game last night, they easily could have won that game. you know, Carter Hart for Philly was outstanding in that second period. So, you know, I think just every team just has more hope in this setting.
Coach, I believe it's pronounced Carter Hart.
Carter Hart, that's right. That's where I'm from, it is.
And it's also pronounced Lafreniere. And I know that that is a front office thing. But when you look at your options now at number one, and I Kapo might have been a guy that really caught my attention more than ever out of your group in the bubble, because, you know, I think I know I talked about this with JD, how you could have, you had the season stop in March, you come back and play in late July. For him, it probably felt like his second season already, because he just played more comfortably, I thought, with your group. I don't know if you agree with me or not, but you have 100%. Him still very young, and I mentioned the other young players that you have on this team. Is there a certain type of player, whether it's I need more of a playmaker now, or I need, you know, a coach has to have some input on what you're looking for.
Right.
So what are you looking for then as a need for this team?
Well, you know, we need to continue to, you know, as you talked about a lot, and everybody has. I mean, we're literally in continuing building to what we have, where we eventually want to go. And if you look at these playoffs and successful teams, your team's makeup is everything. Your personality, your drive, you compete. And, you know, one thing about Lafreniere, I mean, everybody raves about that aspect of his game on top of being skilled. So, you know, obviously people talk about our center position and our D position, but, I mean, I'm sure you've seen it in your sport and football. And, I mean, as much as you want to be able to, you know, improve a certain position, you have to take the best player. Now, if you need a center and, you know, there's a center and a wing that are even or close and there's a conversation, then maybe, you know, the position comes into play when you make that choice. But at the end of the day, the makeup of the player, what type of, you know, the skill set, those things trump the position. And that's where we're at as an organization.
All right, last thing, and thanks for the time here, is this will be also a weird offseason. And for some teams, it'll be a really short one. I imagine it's going to feel short for you, because is training camp November? When is training camp set for you guys?
Yeah, I think everything is really up in the air. I know there are tentative dates where they're looking to start the season in early December, which means training camp would be probably the second week of November. So, you know, that is going to be different. But again, we're all at the mercy of this pandemic, so everything's kind of tentative right now.
Okay, so what is an off-season plan for you? Because this is obviously not a typical off-season either. Normally you're starting it at some point in June. Now you're starting it in August, so it's more fall activities. But what is the plan, though, for the organization as you guys can now go forward looking to the next season?
Yeah, we've been in here, I mean, every day kind of putting the off-season plans together, certainly narrowing and getting our players dialed in about their training and what expected of them when they come back to training camp. And, you know, this stings still. I know I said it did, I'm a little less pissed off than I was when we got back from Toronto, but this stings. And, you know, here we are, you know, a week later, and we want to get going. And, you know, the minute we landed from Toronto, the first day of the next season started, and we've all been dialed in with that approach. Obviously, we will take some time off here, even though during that break you're off, but you're not, because there's always the you're not sure when you're going to play again. So this really is an off season for us. It is shorter. Obviously, we're going to, as an organization, we're going to continue to talk about how ways to improve our team, like every other team is, and our conditioning aspect from our players, and you know. I will sneak in some fall golf, which I've never had a chance to do. So.
Right, normally, right, exactly. Normally at this time you're getting ready for a season. Now
exactly.
you're shutting down from a season. But
right.
either way, things obviously looking up. It feels like it's, from the outside looking, it feels like this is just only the beginning for the program, and that's got to be exciting. So you do have that. You do have the number one pick, and that's also exciting, but we do appreciate the time. I love listening to you when you go on with Rick and Chris and Dave and whatnot. So thanks so much for joining us here.
All right, Al, take care.
Love that sound. Now, as I was saying to Coach Quinn, Spartan Han, by the way, 98.7 ESPN. As I was saying to Coach Quinn, the thing that I really, and I tweeted this too, what's the coolest thing when you're watching these games now with no crowds is when the players score, that you hear them yell, like you hear that, yeah, like you hear them on the ice yell and, you know, like celebrate their goals, which you never hear that because the crowd reacts so quickly and it's like so intense. So it's great. But that's, you know, so there is something compelling about it. Now, also, if you're an Islanders fan, you love hearing it three times in the third period. That's very nice. This was a very interesting game. So the Islanders get the 4-2 win in game one of their first round series with the Capitals. And what did we say? Don't take penalties, right? Don't go into the box because their power play will scare you. TJ Oshie, who's terrific on the play. They have so many weapons on the power play. Kuznetsov and Ovechkin, obviously. Carlson played. I don't think he's 100%, but he did play. Orlov. Like, they've got a really good power play. And so they had the momentum basically because you just kept going in the box. And they get the two goals, but they weren't like it's, they were not dominating the game, right? They were not dominating the game. And it just took a minute. That Eberle goal late in the second period makes it 2-1. And now it's a game. You know, now it's a game. And that goal, see, Holpe's like this. He can give you one. Now, he could also follow it up with like a 40 save, like shutout. Like, he's that kind of goalie. But he gives you that weak one. And then they get three in like a 7-minute span in third period. The game's over. Like, it was fantastic. The Islanders started being the Islanders, and that's using their speed and everything. Relentless pursuit of the puck, and they just stayed strong. They didn't get down on themselves, and they were down 2-0 in the second period. It was a midway through. So that's what you love to see. Now, major controversy, though, that will carry over, and this is what you love, because the game was very physical early, couple of fights. You kind of like it. It's old school hockey. You love it. Anders Lee, the captain of the Islanders, in what I thought was like a very bizarre hit on Nicklas Backstrom, he's a valuable playmaking top center for the Capitals. And Backstrom's making like this curl move in the zone. I think Lee, he had just passed the puck. I think Lee just wanted to, like let him know you're there, that kind of thing. But he starts to hold up because he realizes this dude's turning right into me, and then he just crushes him. And Backstrom goes down, and he's hurt. Now Carlson's coming to fight Lee. Later on, Tom Wilson fights Lee. A lot of back and forth about it. Backstrom played the rest of the period, but then he didn't come back. So they never say what the injury is. They just say, unfit. So he's not able to play. And now it's a concern. And Tom Reardon, the coach of the Capitals, who replaced Barry Trotz as coach of the Capitals, had this to say about the hit.
Unexpected player that was in a spot that he was extremely vulnerable. Late hit. Player wasn't expecting it. And it's predatory.
Predatory. See, that's the part. Late hit. Fair. He got a penalty for it. Player wasn't expecting it. No doubt about it. Because Backstrom's head was down. And the predatory part, that's the part where you're like, oh, really? Like, that's sort of almost sending the message to the league. I don't think Lee's going to get a suspension for it because you see him hold up. And then you even see Lee, like, quickly just turn, like, what the hell was that? As if, I don't think he expected Backstrom to turn that way or whatever it was. It was a very bizarre. First of all, if you know Anders Lee, and we've interviewed him, he's not that kind of player. He's never been that kind of player. There's no history there with him. They wanted to send a message. They wanted to make sure this, because the Capitals are going to play you tough. They're going to be physical. They're going to beat you up around your net. That's how they play. And the Islanders want to make sure they understand that, too. Now, Lee said he tried to put on the brakes, but he said, I caught him. He admitted it. And then he just said, all right, well, it ended up with some a penalty, a couple of fights, and then the game settled down, and then we just continued on. That's basically what he said. I don't think Barry Trotz looked at it the same way. Knows who Anders Lee is, knows what he's about. But you see what Reardon's doing now. He's just sort of setting that tone. Like a predatory. Look what they did to us. Game 2 is going to be very important for the Capitals, obviously. It always is. And so you're going to now see, I wonder if the physicality is going to be there. So here's the question for the Islanders. Is, can they survive another game if they take penalties like they did in the first period of that game? And they give up 2 power play goals, but it could have been a lot worse. Varlamov was good. It could have been a lot worse. But man, I'm telling you, when you see that hit, if you've seen it, Lee on Backstrom, do you think that's a predatory hit? I don't. But do the Capitals now have reason to maybe say, all right, Matt Barzal, you better keep your head up? Because Tom Wilson's on that team now. Keep that stuff in mind. This series, by the way, only just beginning. I don't mean it because it's just a game one. I mean all the other stuff, too. This is going to be a grinder, man. This is going to be a grinder.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays from 1 to 3 on 98.7 ESPN.